Hi there, we are James and Dan, two fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I got one here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda White.
And this is Sam Dalton.
And if you're new here, this is a podcast where Sam and I discuss the nuance and intersection of pop culture, mental health culture, therapy speak.
From a therapist lens.
Yes, we are therapists.
We went to school for this. We literally do this during the week. And we're both content creators as well. So we are in the weeds of this. And as you could guess, we are two women who have a lot of thoughts and we would yap to each other constantly. And so we decided maybe there were other people that liked to listen to us yap.
Yeah. I mean, my first thought that I just have to say is I got my hair highlighted and it's light. My stylist did this thing called a bang piece. Oh my gosh. A money piece. Money pieces on both sides. And it, when I put my hair up in contrast with the rest of my hair, I just have these two streaks. And I just feel like Stacey London with these like white pieces, even though they're blonde. And I might have to go back and get them toned down a bit.
Did you convey to your stylist that your hair is up 97.9% of the time?
No, that's a good point. And I think that's a really accurate description. I think
We've
hung out 100 times and probably you've seen my hair down. Yes.
Twice?
Yeah, three and a half, maybe. Three times.
Even when we record, when we hang out together, when we're at each other's houses, your hair has been in a bun. And I think maybe
my mom hates it. She's always like, why don't you put your hair down? But you know what? My hair is super straight and super flat. And it kind of looks the same, I feel like. I don't know. But I did tell my stylist, I do tell them because everyone tries to give me layers because I have such thin hair.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like, honey, I don't dry my hair with a blow dryer ever. So no point. Layers look terrible if you don't blow dry your hair. They just look weird.
You're always air drying, right?
Yeah, I blow dry my hair when I go out to dinner on a date. That's about it. And that 50% of the time I go out for a date. So I'd say I blow dry my hair once a month.
Ooh. I blow dry my hair every day.
I know, but
with a diffuser.
You have volume and nice hair.
Right before I left Florida to come to New York, I got my hair done. And as like Florida weather does, out of nowhere, there was like going to be a rainstorm. And so while he was like my hairdresser at the time, Dean, he's incredible. While he was like blowing out my hair, he was like, it's going to rain the second you step outside. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I just want you to know, I appreciate your artistry. Mm-hmm. And I see you and I know that you're doing this for no reason. Like, this is not going to last. The humidity. And it didn't the second I stepped outside. And so that's why I don't straighten my hair. So I just have to.
That's why I don't curl my hair. My hair holds a curl for about an hour.
Yeah. No. But with all of that said, speaking of hair and girlhood.
Yes.
And all things complicated. We are talking about something today that actually people have been banging down our door for the last year to do this episode. And we keep like coming around to it. The only reason we haven't is things like happen in the online space or we get ideas that feel immediate to things that we're dealing with professionally or what have you. So we've never landed on this. But today we were like, no, we're finally going to tackle this. And that is the current cultural conversation surrounding bridal showers, bachelorettes, baby showers.
Even I think those, weddings, too.
Even weddings, kind of the pressure, the expectation, the stress, the strain, the overwhelm that these events mm-hmm. cause that nobody really talks about. Mm-hmm. Everybody's feeling, mm-hmm. but none of these thoughts really get expressed at the public level. I think mm-hmm. they're starting to.
Yeah.
I've seen articles and stuff over the past year or so with people kind of addressing like, this is kind of dumb. But yeah, so that is what we're diving into today. So Amanda, what are your like high level thoughts?
Let's see if I can do this. If you've been listening for a while, you know that I struggle with high level thoughts. I get down rabbit holes really quickly.
She does.
And Sam has to be the pilot and, mm-hmm. and rescue me and pull yep. me out. High level, I think that social media has really changed how this whole industry happens. I would even put like kids' birthday parties in it a bit yeah. too, of just like everything is being done for how it looks, for how the photos. It feels like they keep getting bigger and bigger and more extravagant, and everyone is trying to one-up themselves or match each other. And it's a weird pipeline, I feel like, of literally, because I think engagement parties, right? You can start with an engagement party too, of this pipeline of engagement party, bachelorette, bridal shower, wedding, baby shower, kid's first birthday. Ooh. And they all can be together in like 2 years is a pretty common, maybe three
yeah.
time frame of that. And if you're in that, I think people like then try to have their baby shower be really great because they had like a really great wedding shower. And it almost just becomes this thing that you do. And people don't pause and step back and be like, what is the point of all of this?
I haven't ever really like condensed them like that in my own brain. But yeah, if you think about it, it really is this.
And I've done that for multiple people. And I'm sure you have too in your life.
Yeah. 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 The element that kind of ties this all together, I think if we're going to start kind of more high level, is the pressure that social media exposure introduced in like the mid-tens.
Yeah.
Right. Because when I think back to events prior to that that I was a part of, they were actually like pretty straightforward and simple. Yeah.
Well, I'm really interested in your perspective because I actually have like, besides close family, I have very few memories and impact. I didn't start going to weddings until like 2015. So like I don't have a good before perspective of this, really.
Yeah. So if you've been listening to this forever, I apologize. But if you're new here, quick little intro.
We're just trying to pretend like we're getting a lot of new listeners in January. So that's why we keep doing this.
Yeah. So,
but probably not. It's okay. Yeah.
But if you're old here, just consider this a recap. I was born and raised in the Mormon church. And that is a very, very, very specific culture. And if you don't know, Mormons tend to get married very young. Like I'm talking 19 to 21 is
then
probably.
Immediately have babies.
Yes.
So they can have sex.
Yes. Because they also don't know how sex works. So they tend to get pregnant very quickly. Sometimes on purpose, sometimes on accident, whatever. Depends on the couple. So with that being said, I will say like high level, this is a broad brushstroke and I don't care and I'm going to make it because I was in it and I lived it. Mormon weddings tend to be, they happen very quickly. Like I am talking, there are people that I knew of who were engaged for maybe 2 months.
Woo!
Maybe. A long engagement is like 5-6 months. And even then, there are people expressing like, oh my God, you guys are waiting so long. Like I remember being in college and people would get married. I have no idea why people did this. People would get married like the weekend before finals.
Oh my God.
It was so weird. I remember even at the time being like in my early, early 20s. And I would always be like, why? Like, why? Why not do it the week after? Like, why do you have to do it? Why are you doing it in the middle of finals?
You needed to have sex.
Exactly. Exactly. So they're very rushed. There was a lot of people borrowing others.
Like, I was going to ask, what are the intricacies of how do they make this? Like the whole culture of Utah must be framed around
yes.
getting dresses quickly, all of that stuff.
There were people that rent wedding dresses, which I know some people are starting to do that now, like even outside. I don't think that an element like that doesn't inherently bother me. Yeah, it was. So the other thing is people would use like their church building or their parents' church building for the reception. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people wouldn't even necessarily have a reception. They would have more of an open house, which is where people, like the bride and groom will be there. They'll be all dressed up. But then people just kind of come and go as they please. Mm-hmm. They might have like an hors d'oeuvre situation, but that's about it. Very rarely would you have what is a typical reception now after a wedding. There was no, there certainly wasn't any version of a cocktail hour or any type of before event rehearsal dinner. That wasn't really a thing because there's no rehearsal because you're just getting married in the temple and only certain people can be there because you are required to have a temple recommend. So anybody who doesn't have a temple recommend is literally waiting outside.
Even if it's your mom.
Yes.
Also, if you're new here, I like to regurgitate information that I know from Sam as though I'm part of it.
Yes. Yeah. Literally, like my mom, on a personal level, her greatest regret is that her dad was left outside of the temple.
Oh, I did not know that. That's interesting.
And my dad's dad, because even though my dad was born and raised in the church, his dad was never a member.
Yeah.
And so both of their dads just like sat outside and were excluded. It's a whole thing. So yes, like it's a big deal, like if a sibling has left the church and they can't be a part of the wedding. And that's kind of used as a guilt trip, a shame trip, if you will. So you're not going to be able to be there for Brian's wedding. Like, you know, the whole shindig. So you don't really need any type of rehearsal because there isn't one. Because you literally just like show up at the temple. So one of the things that's bothered me the most, and I feel like I kind of straddle two worlds with this. Something that bothered me is it felt that Mormon weddings aren't really celebratory to me. They don't really feel extraordinarily special.
Yeah.
Everybody does the same things. It's the same routines. When you get out of the temple, you have people waiting. Everybody goes, woo, yay. Then everybody kind of goes their separate ways, maybe meets up later for the reception. Then it's done. That's it. Yeah. So I was used to very simple, kind of slapdash, thrown together. Most of the time people, they themselves have no money because they're in that 19 to 24 range.
Yeah.
So they're beholden to their parents, which like, yes, parents pay for weddings regardless. But, you know, a lot of times people will have, they could have three or four kids get married in like a 5-year span.
Yeah.
Depending on how that happens. It's just, it is a very different culture that was not the typical wedding vision. So the reason I'm introducing this is because I live in this weird world where I'm like, well, yeah, like it should be something that is much more special than that. I think it shouldn't be something that isn't so rushed. You should have these moments and these events that feel very special and unique to your story and the life that you're wanting to build together and feeling like there's something important to that. So I used to look at other weddings as a kid and be like so envious of like, oh my God, like that looks so special. And like walking down the aisle and, you know, seeing the concept of the bachelorette. And like Mormons still do like bridal showers and they do bachelorettes, but Mormon bachelorettes are the most awkward thing in the world. The most awkward thing. It's just like everybody's like, sex. Like, it's just weird. And then, you know, people think that they're being like so forward thinking when they have like a penis straw. Like, it's just odd. So anyway, so I was in this middle world where I'm like, ooh, like, you know, it should be special. It should be a big deal. It should matter. But then I think over the last, let's say 10 years with the advent of social media, the algorithm, Instagram, TikTok, all of this, the content creation machine that we now all live in and consume from. I've watched this very frightening trend occur where weddings are now multi-day, multi-week, multi-month affairs, where the lens I want to offer now is that there, and I'm really interested to hear your take too from like the therapist perspective, is the behind the scenes that we get as we are helping clients navigate their own wedding, navigate the wedding of a sibling, navigate the wedding of a friend. And hearing the drama, the strain, the stress, the overwhelm of what everybody is expected to do to create this unhinged dream mm-hmm. come to life of the bachelorette trip, the massive wedding shower, the massive event around the wedding, the multiple dinners, the multiple brunches, the rehearsal dinners, the, you know, the event itself, the reception the night, then having something the morning after, and the chaos mm-hmm. in order to be able to have what I think people view as a perfect day.
Yeah.
And underneath all that is cost, almost like a loyalty test.
Yes.
Of how much do you love me? How bad do you want to be here? How bad do you want to be a part of it? People questioning a friendship now mm-hmm. of the expectations that were placed on them, or how people aren't living up to the expectations if you find yourself in the bride role, right? Yeah. Expecting insane financial investment mm-hmm. from people. I just find it all concerning because to me, it's like, for what? Mm-hmm. Like, is this the peak of your life? Like, that's kind of when I look at some of these events, when I look at everything collectively, right? Like the bachelorette, or I would even say like as you laid out, right? Like the engagement party, the bachelorette, the wedding shower, the wedding itself, the baby shower, kid's first birthday, right? It's like, are we going so hard on this because we almost kind of feel like this is it?
I think we do. As someone who is married.
Yes, please.
I truly believed that. Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting looking back at my own experience and being, you know, sort of like, what do I regret and what did I think? I mean, I literally thought this is going to be the most beautiful I will ever be in my entire life. So I need to. God. I literally, that was like a driving overhang of everything. I will never be this beautiful again. I will never have professional makeup, professional photos like this. So I need to be as like beautiful as possible. Mm-hmm. I think that I also had it that, and this is like, I'm sure I did things that probably weren't great on the back end. I think as someone who struggled with friendship, I really had it of like, not a loyalty test, I would say, though I think some people do. I think for me, I was like, this is my opportunity to cement people in my life. Like if they are a bridesmaid, it's like an opportunity that we will like spend a lot of time together. We will deepen our relationship, which is true in some ways. Like that is one of the positive things I think about it if people aren't upset at you and you have like realistic expectations.
Right, right.
But I think that I in some ways tried to like force things to happen in certain ways. And you kind of have this weird experience where like literally someone who was my bridesmaid, like I don't talk to anymore. And that is a normal thing. Yes. Also that happened.
I was in someone's wedding and I haven't spoken to her in years.
And that is, I mean, especially the younger you are and things mm-hmm. like that. And I think that we can delude ourselves into thinking that like, I don't know, I just had it that this was the bedrock, the foundation that was going to set up the rest of my life, which is an extraordinary amount of pressure. Like, I think in some ways, I liked the way that we approached it because my husband and I were very into, you know, not involving religion in any way and really like people are going to probably laugh at me when I say this, but I really like thought of the wedding as sort of this like artistic expression of our love.
That is so you. I know. That is the most Amanda thing that's ever been said, guys.
So I like wrote the entire, not just our vows, I wrote the script that our friend read. And I spent a lot of time like writing it and rewriting it. And I used like an Esther Perel quote. I had, you know, someone read a quote from one of my good friends who is also sort of like a cynical skeptic a little bit, I guess, like me. I had him read part of a column that's called like, "You'll Marry the Wrong Person." Like it was very us and I'm very proud of it looking back. It was like,
yeah.
I really wanted people to leave the wedding feeling like they knew us better as a couple because those are my favorite types of weddings to go to. So I definitely like drove myself a little bit crazy about that. And I think that can explain some of the, you know, part of the ceremony. I think I said like, you know, and it's what we do. We say in weddings is like your family and your friends are like, we'll support you in this. And I'm sure it's even more in like the Mormon church. And I think that just throwing a party does it is an opportunity that I don't, I sometimes am like, I want people to be clear about what they're doing and think about it and care about the meaning behind it. So I don't think attention is bad. I just think, yeah, we can't get so caught off. And I definitely did. Like, I got lost down Pinterest and I lost my mind over so many details that don't matter. And I think it is that pressure that you put out. Like, I put a lot of pressure on myself for it to be the best day of my life. And it's not the best day for a lot of people. And it's a really stressful day.
In my head, while you were talking, as I do, I've like formulated this whole like breakdown of, I'm like, okay, here's all the problems. So your example is perfect, because I think part of why you're able to look back on it so fondly and feel so proud of it is because it was so authentically you.
Yeah.
You had a very clear understanding of what you wanted, what mattered to you, what you wanted that day to feel like for you. And you still got caught up in all of the hoopla, because it is a big deal and it matters. And it should be important and it should be a standout event in your life. Absolutely. Here's where I think my concerns are high level. If we look at this idea of all of these events and the pressure and the drama and the fatigue around it, the financial strain, right? You have two groups here. You have really the bride and the groom, and then you have everybody else in their life. And so I know you're listening to this and you're like, wow, novel breakdown, Sam. No, like, come with me. So where I get concerned when I start to hear about these events is, what is the intention of the bride and the groom, right? What are we doing here? Why are you doing what you're doing? And I think that's a big question that a lot of people don't pause to ask themselves, because they just assume that there are things that need to happen.
Yeah.
Right? They assume that there are things that need to be done because it's what everybody does. And also, you're dealing with people having a vision of what they've wanted their whole life. There is a massive fear, and this could be applied to anything in your life, right? If you have a picture in your mind of how something is supposed to be, it can be devastating when you realize that thing is not living up to the vision. Like, the reality is not matching the vision. There's imperfection. There's things not going your way. There's things not coming together the way you thought it would.
Yep.
Things feeling different, seeming different. And so I think, at a high level, you have sometimes these couples that aren't really asking these questions, or they are, and they have very unfair expectations for the people in their life. Then the people in their life are struggling with, I don't know how to say no. I don't even know what my own boundaries are. I just know that I'm stressed and I'm overwhelmed, but I'm not pausing to ask myself why.
Yep.
We have issues of communication from both sides. I think you just get caught in this mess where it just feels easier to go along, which sometimes that works. Sometimes it works to be like, I'm just going to let this go and I'll just live with it and it'll be fine. But what happens is, when you're not communicating up front, when you're not being honest about what you can and can't do, when you're not being straightforward about what your expectations are, that is where you get a petri dish breeding ground for resentment. And you have the drama and you have the explosions between people that seem to come out of nowhere, right? You have the maid of honor losing her absolute mind. You have the bridal party in disarray because nobody's communicating and nobody likes this one person that was included, because the bride just wants everybody in her life to not feel left out. And so everybody got thrown together, these people that have had problems for years. Then you have the financial component of, not everybody is making multiple six figures. And so they can't necessarily afford huge vacations. They're using all of their PTO time to accommodate this event. I mean, when I hear people having like 7 or 8 weddings in a year, I'm like,
what? Who is having seven or eight weddings in a year?
I have had friends. I've had clients who, like, in certain summers were attending like 6 to 8 weddings.
Oh, I thought you meant someone was getting married. They have seven or eight parties.
No, sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that happens.
And when, like, all of your friends get married at the same time, that is categorically overwhelming.
Yeah.
And so what I want to normalize here through all of this is, like, if we – let's look at this just, like, from the bride's point of view, because I'm not a man. I'm not a groom. So we'll just look at this from the bride. And I'm not blaming a bride here.
Yeah.
It's why I started out with the groom, because dudes have just as many wants and desires. They might just not communicate it, or they do the ever-present problem of not caring about anything. So everything gets put on the bride. The bride feels like it's all on her. And then that's where we get the term bridezilla. And it's like, well, there's a dude in this that's doing absolutely nothing. Can we call attention to that for a second? Even though some brides can absolutely get carried away and become ridiculous. But if we like focus in on the bride, in my mind, if you are planning a wedding right now, or you know you're going to be planning a wedding soon, or you know somebody's going to be planning a wedding, I think you have to allow space for a couple of things here. You have to allow space that this event doesn't have to be perfect to have meaning.
Yeah.
This event does not have to go exactly the way your 7-year-old self envisioned it in order to be an important day to you. You can also compromise on some things while still making the day special. Changing, you know, certain elements, maybe doing a few less days for a trip, maybe not even doing a trip, maybe just doing like a really nice dinner with the people that live local to you. That is just as meaningful as the grand vision, right? Second thing, you have to be willing and open to people saying no to you. If you are asking people to do something expensive, elaborate, exorbitant, you have to be prepared that that is going to be a very small list and a lot of people might say no to you. And you have to be kind and gracious when those no's come in. And you have to be realistic about what you have asked of people, okay? This is like, these are hard truths that I know a lot of you are like, but, and I just want you to sit with it. And the third thing in all of this is you have to be willing to be fair and you have to meet the people in your life where they're at. And so if you are planning a like multiple six-figure wedding, knowing most people in your life work standard jobs, okay, maybe you have to be realistic of, well, what is important to me? Is it important to me to have the destination wedding where we're maybe going to have a very small group of people? Or is it important to me that everybody is there? So that means it is going to be local. It's probably going to be lower budget, if you will. But what matters to me is that I have people there.
Yeah.
Right? If all you care about is you and your man's or you and your partner, go nuts. You can elope. You can do whatever you want. You can get married on top of Everest. You can get married in Fiji. Do whatever you want, right? Like if you want exorbitant, you do that. But understand there's a natural consequence to that. Same thing with if you decide you want to invite everybody and what matters more than anything to you is everybody that you've ever known in your life is there, then you might have to do some things a little differently to accommodate that goal. But this goes all the way back to the beginning where we talk about you have to be clear about what matters to you about the day. What actually matters to you? Because nothing in life includes you getting everything that you've ever wanted. Nothing, nothing in your life will work out that way. And to be insistent that everything happens exactly the way you want it is where you create drama.
I love that, Sam. I think that is exactly the best way to say it, is like nothing in life ever goes the way that we want. And I think it is sort of how I got caught, is I think we have this pressure that this day should be perfect, magical, the best day of our life. We forget that it is still life. We forget that nothing will be perfect. And I really had it, and I think a lot of brides have it, because even the word perfect is used a lot. Like even just like when you meet with vendors and stuff, they say that to you. They're like, you know, hire me, everything will be perfect. You'll have like everything is really sold that way. And it can make you forget that this is a day. You're still human. Like there will be things that go wrong because that is life, and we can never get everything we want, just like you said. And I think that when I look at myself, I did have, for example, I had a bachelorette where we went to Florida, and I knew not everyone would come. And I tried to make it more affordable for people because we stayed at my parents' house. And that was like something that I wanted to do. And I was really clear that I like didn't want people paying for me, because that, I mean, that is something I would like to touch on and get into. I really have an issue, because I really didn't believe this, of why is it your job as a bridesmaid to basically like work for the bride?
It
was nice that I think my bridesmaids like decorated my parents' house, and it was like cute, and they like helped plan it. But I don't know, I guess I'm just like a hyper independent person too, so I like mostly planned my bachelorette. I mostly planned my shower with my mom because I was just like, I'm not going to make my friends like pay for this or do this. Like, this isn't their responsibility. They don't know what I want. Like, I really reject the idea that your bridesmaids work for you beyond the day of the wedding. I think that, and even then, I think you should consider their experience. They shouldn't just be, you should want them to have fun. You should want them to have a good time. Obviously, they're going to be with you getting dressed and are going to do pictures and help maybe, you know, you go to the bathroom and things like that that are, you know, for you. But I think you should absolutely think about their experience. And yeah, I really, the idea also that bridesmaids have to pay for someone's bachelorette and have to pay for their bridal shower is insane to me.
Yeah, I struggle with that expectation as well, because I think everybody gets set up for failure. Everybody gets set up for failure when you decide you want to do a 4-day trip.
Yeah. And it's supposed to be like, well, we want to do what the bride wants to do. We
right.
want her to have so much fun. And again, we're like treating her like a child.
Yes.
Like, again, reality disappears from the conversation.
Right. And I think the financial pressure and strain that I think is also, that also gets put on families, like that gets put on everybody. Now, this is not, I want to be clear that this is not like anti-wedding. Like,
yeah.
I have a vision in my mind for how I'd like my future wedding to go. I will tell you, it is night and day different from what I thought I was going to want when I was in my 20s.
Oh my God. If you, I look back at, when I was planning my wedding, looked at my old Pinterest wedding board. It is the most embarrassing thing in the world. Burlap around mason jars, high
teal.
Teal.
Why was teal?
Writing, you know, all of that. Yeah. No offense to anyone who got married during that time and who had a teal and mason jar wedding. I think that's great for you. And I definitely did things that dated myself and will date myself. But I don't care now, which is actually really interesting.
Yeah.
I don't care because it was very unique to me in that moment, where if I would have done a teal wedding, it would have been because, you know, in the 2010s or whatever, it would have been because I saw that was what other people were doing.
If you think this thing is beautiful, please do it. If you still think the color teal is lovely, I really want to support you in that. It just couldn't be me. But regardless, I think I want to like chat to like the friends right now, like the friends that are involved, because I have been in those shoes and it's really hard. I've heard horror stories from both clients and friends of what all of this hoopla causes. And I think what I've found happen in the friend camp or the bridal party camp or family camp, right, depending on how you're related to the bride, is nobody is upfront with the bride at the start. And so where I think sometimes the problem comes in is people will confirm, yes, I'm in for the multi-day bachelorette event. Then they back out like 2 weeks before because all of a sudden they're like, oh, I can't do this. Or they've known they can't do it the whole time. Mm-hmm. And they've just had spicy tummy trying to figure out how they're going to do this. And then they back out. And then that's when the bride gets upset. And it's this whole...
Or
and
even
then,
you say yes to being a bridesmaid and you don't know what the bridesmaid's plans are. And I think that goes a little bit to my point of, again, like if you're asking someone to be a bridesmaid and you're not laying out what your expectations are for them beyond just showing up for the events that they can and showing up on the day of the wedding, I think you need to be clear so that people aren't – so that people can actually have consent in what they're doing.
Yes. And I think it's lovely to do the whole like proposal box, you know, where you give everybody like a Cartier love bracelet and be like, will you be my forever sister? Like, no. That's great if you want to do that. But I'm with you. Like, be upfront at the beginning of like, hey, I just want you to know I would really love my bachelorette to be a trip, right? The shower is more likely than not going to be here. Do you notice like we're not even giving specifics, but we're laying out a general idea of what the expectation is going to be?
Well, do you know why people don't do this? Also, is a huge reason is, number one, I think people don't realize what they want because they get caught up in it and they see what other people are doing and then they get jealous. And the other huge issue with this is that people need to be surprised. And they need to act like there's this whole part of wedding culture, especially with a bachelorette and a bridal shower, of the amount of money that someone spends on me and the amount of effort my bridesmaids go through is proof over how much they love me and care about me. And there is all of this stuff about, especially when a lot of times brides don't plan their bachelorette.
Most times, it's the maid of honor.
Yes. And a lot of times they don't plan, you know, their family or their groom's family or someone does the, or maybe they do the bridesmaids does the bridal shower. And again, it's supposed to be like caught off guard, surprised. You're supposed to be like, look at what my girls did for me. I'm so surprised. They know me so well. And it is this whole thing rather than, again, like I was just like, this is what I want. I'm going to plan it. My maid of honor planned some like trips and some dinners and things like that. But yeah, I hate the culture of, oh my goodness, I was just so caught off guard and surprised and I didn't even know.
Well, it's like everybody is set up to fail. Mm-hmm. Like everybody is set up to fail. And also I think, I don't know where these people are finding like 10 people bridal parties.
I think they have big families.
Yeah.
Their husband or spouse has a big family.
Yeah.
And I think that people, I think they also have friend groups. They have friend groups that are intact and they're not individually close to all of these people, but they were in a friend group of 8 people in college and they're not going to leave one or two people out.
I think what I try to remind myself of is I sometimes try to be too, what's the word? It's not cynical because I do think these things are special.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why I'm talking about this in this way is I want it to be done in a way that feels sustainable for everybody.
Yeah.
Right? Like I think these things could be managed in a way where there's minimal issue and minimal like emotional turmoil and trauma that everybody has to go through. And I know sometimes I kind of can have like a utopian view of like, well, if everybody just got together and talked about it, it would be fine. Yeah. And I understand like every friend group has a loose cannon that you can't predict how they're going to feel about things or what they're going to do. And sometimes the bride is the one who's the loose cannon. But I just think so much of this could be alleviated by people just being honest upfront, even when you don't necessarily know the details, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you have been asked, we'll use like kind of a specific example. You have been asked to be the bridesmaid and you really want to do it, but you're looking at your bank account and you're like, I'm nervous. Mm-hmm. Like I know the other, you know, financial obligations I have coming in this next year. I'm really worried, right? And so to go to the bride individually, don't go to the other members of the bridal party. Go to the bride, who should be a person you are relatively connected to if you've been asked to be a part of this, and explain the situation and say, like, when you are able to lay expectations like that, mm-hmm. people know eyes wide open what they're walking into. Now, I think another element to that is before you have that conversation, push yourself a little bit and allow room to say, like, how could I make this work? Could I make this work? Right? What am I able mm-hmm. to do realistically? And you operate from that space. But I just think everybody's expectations are so insane because of the pressure of what you want to show to everybody else on social media, how loved you want to feel and both look to the outside world. It is supposed to be, I think this is what is a double-edged sword with weddings, is it's this incredible event where it feels like it's proof of how many people you have in your life, the depth of the connections you have in your life, how incredible your partnership is, how excited everybody is for you guys coming together, and the whole like, we knew from the moment we first saw them together that they were incredible and they're perfect and it's going to be amazing. And that is, it's just so much pressure. It's so much pressure to have it all be perfect and to have it held up to this like measuring stick mm-hmm. of, wow, like it was even better than I imagined it to be. And mm-hmm. exactly as you said, like with the bachelorette, like, oh my God, you guys, like the decorations and the this and the themed nights mm-hmm. and we coordinated outfits for this. And like, it just feels, and I don't know, maybe I'm trying to be too realistic because I'm not married yet. And so mm-hmm. I'm just like, well, everybody needs to recognize life doesn't work the way you want it to sometimes. But it really is true. Like, I think everybody sets themselves up for failure when they go into this thing gung-ho, and then everybody's just like internally bitter and resentful that things aren't going this way, or they're like the amount of time they're being asked to dictate to it. Then I think also there's an element too where the maids of honor sometimes cause mm-hmm. these problems too.
Yeah.
The pressure that they put on themselves
Mm-hmm. Or other people, even, yeah. I think, you know, we're going to do this, guys. You have to come. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. The bullying through group chat constantly. Yeah.
I think what I struggle with, and this is just like a fundamental core part of my personality that I don't relate to other people on, is it is not fun for me to be around people who are not having fun.
Yeah.
I am physically uncomfortable if I know someone is doing something
they don't want to do.
And I don't mean like they're having the, you know, no one should come to a wedding, but I just mean like to not think through what people's experience is. To not be conscious. Now, I'm not saying you have to cater your entire event or whatever to someone. I guess I just was someone who I would so much rather if someone doesn't want to come to something.
Yes.
Don't come.
Do not come.
Why do I want to be around someone? Like, it's so awkward to be around someone who's forcing themselves to have fun. And I guess it's different if you don't have, if you feel like having a certain amount of people is what you need or what you want. But yeah, I just fundamentally feel so uncomfortable when I'm forcing anyone to do anything. And I really try to go above and beyond to think about things. Like I think making everyone wear the same wedding dress or the same, bridesmaid dress is really challenging.
Some people choose the most absurd colors.
I mean, I just had everyone wear a black dress and they got to choose the black dress and it was simple. But I was sitting here thinking, I don't know, maybe some people really hate wearing black. So maybe that was...
I don't know. I think... And to be
but
fair...
But I get it. Like, some people want a vision and they want to see what it looks like. And I get that. And I also am very much a believer of, if you invite me to your wedding, like, I'm going to show up with bells on.
Yep.
I will wear whatever you say to wear. I will follow the dress code. It is not about me. It is about you. And I fully believe that with every bone in my body, or I wouldn't come, because like that's my role, sort of. And especially after having a wedding, like I have more perspective, but I also believe in it being someone else's day. And it is like an honor to show up and to see them have an incredible day. And it's not about me.
Right. I love that, because I feel the same exact way about showing up for people. And I try in my friendships in general to just like show up very authentically and supportive. And I think it is hard when you are like the tail end bride, right? Kind of like the end of the year bride.
Yeah.
If you will. Or like the last one in the friend group. And I do, if you are involved in a wedding, and you know, you've already been married, the other friends have already been married, you know, this person is kind of like the last one, I would like really encourage you to try to go out of your way to make that special, especially if they have shown up for you at that same level. And I think this even speaks to friendship in general.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this is really what we're talking about, is like fundamental friendship moments that do sometimes solidify the bonds that you have. And I think something to really look for is like, how hard did someone go for you, right? How did they show up to the thing? Did they contribute? Did they sacrifice? Did they fight for you in that way? And if you know someone did show up for you in that way, and it was breathtaking, and you felt so loved and cared for and seen, and they're a few years after you, I would really challenge you to match that energy.
Yeah.
Even if it's going to require sacrifice.
And I think that's what's really hard, is what happens as we're talking about this series, this timeline, is a lot of those later brides, women are in like early postpartum, or they're pregnant and things like that. And it's there isn't like a good solution, where I think that people need to try to show up and do the best they can. And that's where I think it is. Everyone's circumstances are unique, and what is like 100% for that person.
Which is where the communication comes in, right? Yeah. And like, if you are postpartum, like, communicate that and say, here's what I know I'm going to be able to do. Please assign me that. Don't make me in charge of this, because that's going to be really hard for me. Please let me do. I want to like knock this out of the park for you. And I know I can do this, right? And sometimes, like, I'm going to be really honest, guys. Like, okay, you're tired. Everybody's tired. Everything is tiring all the time. That is like adulthood. And this is not, I'm not shaming new moms. I'm not shaming single people. I'm not shaming people that work. I'm not doing that. What I'm saying is, it is okay to look at something and be like, ugh, I know I'm going to be exhausted after that.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's okay. That is not an innate sign that you are doing something that is betraying you, or not good for you, or not taking care of yourself. And I have explained this a lot to some of the brides that I've worked with over the years and some of the people that have been involved. And that's that there's two different kinds of stress. And I think a lot of people assume that all stress is bad. And there's two types. The first one is distress, which is the typical version that we know of and talk about, right? These are things that are hard, challenging, sickness, accidents, financial stress and strain, unforeseen circumstances, tragedy, right? All of that. But then there is also eustress, which is good stress. And eustress involves planning a wedding,
yes,
right? It's something that's good. It's something that we're excited about, but it is inherently stressful. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of decisions to be made, a lot of moving parts, a lot of unknown, trying to make something happen and come together. But it's the same if you end up being a part of a wedding, right? Like I would say being part of a wedding more often than not, I hope, is a eustress event for you.
Yeah.
But I think there are some people that automatically assume that because it is going to be stressful, that means it is going to be innately bad or innately too difficult. And I think I know we're kind of like all over the place here, but if you notice, the title of the podcast is Nuance Needed. And so we're trying to like come at this from multiple different angles. And so I think if you know a dear friend of yours has asked you to be a part of the wedding, and maybe you are the parent of a toddler or you are pregnant or, you know, there's a lot going on for you in your life, regardless of that, I really want you to spend some time to think of like, well, what does this friendship mean to me? And how has this person shown up for me in my life? If they haven't shown up for you, right? If this isn't someone that's been showing up for you, you then get to act accordingly, right? You get to make decisions. If this is a person that hasn't been there for you, hasn't kept up with you, has been flaky on things, right? Like you get to match that energy. You don't have to go above and beyond for somebody that hasn't done those things for you. And if someone has done those things for you, I would really urge you, even if you are in an inconvenient space in your life, to try your best to show up for them. Because I think there is this, I think it's starting to change a little bit, but there is kind of a concept that like friendship dies once you get married and then have kids. And I think kids is kind of like the death knell of like, well, nothing else could ever come first before this thing. And that's forever now and it never changes. And it's like, if you're like, there's a reason you're lonely. It's because you're not talking to people. You're not making that effort to still reach out and maintain those connections. And I'm not saying like it's not hard or that it's not challenging or that it's not inconvenient. It is. But that is the price you pay. If you want to keep people in your life, if you want to be involved, that is going to involve you showing up when it is not always the best timing for you. And I think if there is a friend that you've been really close to for a long time and they're the last one to do the things and mark the moment, you damn well better show up for them. And it actually is a you problem if you're not. If that was someone that did everything for you and was a part of everything for you and followed up and showed up, if you're not showing up for them, I'm sorry, you're the problem. I don't care what your life circumstance is. And I think we need to be holding people to account for that, that there is kind of this like, oh, well, I don't need to do it because like, no, like I have this situation. And it's like, no, that's not good enough.
It's Amanda. I wanted to give a quick plug for our Substack. We just recorded a really great bonus episode about Mel Robbins and the protein saga of it all. So if you loved our Let Them Theory episode, you will love this one. We dive deep and talk about bigger themes. So check us out there at nuanceneeded.substack.com.
Spring is giving fresh start vibes, like suddenly you want to open the windows, drink more water, and maybe act like you have your life together. But when dinner rolls around and you're this close to ordering takeout again, ButcherBox can help. They deliver premium, clean protein straight to your door. No antibiotics, no added hormones, no mystery ingredients. Just real food that actually fuels your body instead of slowing it down. Effortless glow-up energy, but make it dinner. For over a decade, ButcherBox has led the industry with meat and seafood that's antibiotic-free, hormone-free, and independently verified. Because when it comes to fueling your body, quality isn't extra. It's everything. Clean, whole protein means better support for strength, metabolism, and that steady, all-day energy we're all chasing. As an exclusive offer, new listeners can get their choice between chicken breast or top sirloin for a year, or ground beef for life. plus $20 off when you go to butcherbox.com/pods. That's right, your choice of chicken breast or top sirloin for a year or ground beef for life, plus $20 off your first box and free shipping always. That's butcherbox.com/pods. Don't forget to use our link so they know that we sent you.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's mind.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot knot.
Very good. I got here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I think, too, there is this idea, and I will speak to both sides of this, right? I think that there is this idea sometimes, and I get it as a parent, of you sort of look back and you're like, oh, my God, I cannot believe I was so worried about flowers.
Right.
Like, I'm, like, trying to keep this human alive. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I fully get that now. I look back at some of my problems, and I'm like, all right, get it together. You are losing sleep over, you know, the fonts not matching. So I get that. And I think you have to sort of, you know, and I think sleep deprivation is real. And I've struggled a lot in postpartum and toddlerhood and things like that. And I had one of my bridesmaids, you know, she had, I think, a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. And she was like in it. And, you know, I talked to her about being in it and she was like, look, this is what it'll look like for me. I will come and be at the wedding and I will be present there, but I cannot go to any other event. And and she was like, does that work for you? And I was like, absolutely. I want you there. And I think that was a very good example of like her 100% looked different than some of my other friendships. But I know she like fully gave, like it was challenging for her to get childcare and fly to Florida and be a part of everything. And I will like hold on to that for the rest of my life.
That is the perfect example of like everything that we've been talking about. Like a lot of this just really could be tied down to like being honest about your situation in the moment. And I think there's a lot to say about like under promise, over deliver.
Oh, I totally, that is like my life motto.
Under promise, over deliver. Because when you over deliver, you are going to be a hero no matter what that over delivering looks like, right? Especially when you've set the bar really low.
Especially if you're a parent, please like make that your mantra.
Yes. Under promise, over deliver. But I guess like I just kind of want to challenge people too, especially like if the wedding is more local, right? Like if you're living in the same place and around
the
same
rent. Yeah, like, I agree.
I think I do want to challenge you, some of you a little bit to be like, have I kind of scared myself out of what I think I can or cannot do. Brides, allow open conversation, babe. Allow open conversation. I know you have a lot going on. There's a lot on your plate. But if you are expecting these people to have shit heaped on their plate as a result of what you're asking them to do, you need to make yourself available. And I know there's a lot of people that are like, well, that's the maid of honor's job. And it's like, well, no, because when you automatically defer to the maid of honor, you create telephone.
Yep, I agree.
And telephone is where we start to have a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of assumptions made and storylines woven in our head from our own anxiety and insecurities. And so like, make yourself available to your girls. Like, let them know that they can talk to you about things and that if they have concerns about things, like you'll hear them out. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to immediately change anything about the day, but to just recognize that like, these are still your friends. They did not just become assets. They did not just become workers, as you said earlier, employees. They did not become like representatives and delegates of you. Like,
yeah, especially the maid of honor stuff. I think it's real weird. Like, I think the maid of honor's job is logistics in some ways and like a special
organization.
Yeah, organization, what the bride needs like on the day and stuff like that. And if you want them to plan your bachelorette and you planned their bachelorette and things like that, reciprocity. But yeah, they should not be acting as your therapist or your representative for what you want other, like you shouldn't be texting your you're, and maybe people will get mad at me for this, but I don't think you should be texting your maid of honor being like, this is what I want everyone to do. Like,
yeah.
You shouldn't yeah. be like, this is what we're going to wear for the bridesmaids. This is what I need. That, like, yeah. that should just come from you.
Yes. I also think something else I want to throw out here, because I have helped people navigate this problem before, and I have navigated this problem before. If you are not supportive of the union.
Oh, yeah. Shut the fuck up.
Shut up. Shut up. You, the second the ring goes on that finger, you've lost.
Yep.
You've lost the war.
But what you will lose if you open your mouth yes. is the relationship.
Correct. Correct. Now, of course, if you know he's like punching her face in, please have conversations. That's not what we're talking about. But if this was just someone that you don't agree with how they do things, you don't think this person.
They're a great match.
Yeah, they're a good match. You have some concerns about that.
The window has closed.
It's closed. It's done. It's dead. This is why.
But if you do, I did have a friend who broke off her engagement. I didn't say anything, but I was there. You can be there on the other side.
Be there with bells on the other side. If they end the engagement, you better go on vacation. Okay? Seriously. Like, if you are not supportive of this mm-hmm. union, I'm sorry. That is really hard. But it is not your job to save people from the natural consequences of their decisions.
And you can't. If you
can't.
It's like, I'm trying to think of a good metaphor to describe this. It's like when you try to pull out a knife that's stuck in your leg,
yeah.
right? It's like, you're going to just die. Like, you just will mess it up and make it worse. It's like someone being lost and you go looking for them and then they come back to where you were and you're already gone.
Yes. You just, if they're engaged, you
stay
lost.
There and wait until you've they come lost back.
You just wait. And you're like, I will be here to support you. This is why, like, I'm a huge advocate for, like, express your concerns early on.
Yeah.
If you are noticing concerns, express them early on. And then you react based on how the other person reacts, okay? Because there's only so much you can do. And there have been unions in my friend circle that I have not liked. And I've had times where I haven't shut up when I should have. And I have times where I've shut up when I should have been very loud. And I think it's impossible to know what the answer is, right? But I've learned I would rather share my opinion up front, have it be clear on where I stand, but then they know I support them, right? Than be left on the outskirts because I pushed too hard. And so if you don't like the
And
union,
we all make bad decisions.
Yes.
Like everyone has bad decisions yeah. and things they make. And I think it is interesting with relationships how somehow, mm-hmm. and I'm just thinking this out loud, that like, and I think it's part of it is because we're impacted maybe more by some yeah. of those decisions. But it is interesting how it's like if your friend did something else stupid, you would never like not be friends with them. But we do sometimes do that with, you know, we're like, well, I just can't support this. I just can't support you. It's like, okay, but if they, I don't know, I think a lot of us would be friends with someone who like
has bad taste in men.
Well, I mean, even like a different subject. Like I was trying to think, would I be friends with someone who like robbed a bank? Probably not.
It would depend. It would depend what they did. If they bought me something, I'd be like, oh, Robin Hood. Yay.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, I guess, right? Like ethics, morals,
you
know, all of that is different.
Right.
But, right, like a lot of us make stupid, but impulsive decisions and we have to support our friends through it. Like, I think that could be a whole nother conversation of how much do you support your friend who keeps doing the same dumb thing over and over and over and over again.
Right.
I think
right,
if they're
right,
using right. you for emotional support, it's a little different. If you yep. are the emotional support person for your friend who hates her relationship and then she's getting married, a little more complicated.
A little more complicated. But, yeah. If yeah. you know that this person has cheated on them multiple times and they're still getting married.
It's so hard.
I think there's a world where like you're allowed to be honest
yeah.
and supportive, right?
Yeah.
Like where you can be like, you know how I feel. Like, I'm here to support you, but I just want you to know, like, this isn't my dream for you. But I'm doing this because I think you're happy. Don't know how, but I know you're happy. So I, like, whatever. And yeah, I think relieve yourself of the pressure that it is your job to save them from themselves. Because that's where you start to get into the burnout and the resentment and the emotional fatigue in the relationship that will tank the relationship. And not every friendship is meant to go the distance, right? Not every, and we have an episode coming on friendships that were noodling around.
Yeah. Well, my favorite stat about friendship is friendships on average only last 7 years.
Yeah, it's so true.
And once I learned that, I was like, oh, okay. Because it's really intense, I think, that we're like, God, you have to have your friends from high school and then college and then, you know, work. And you have friendships that follow you. And it's a lot of pressure we put on friendships. And we do actually have a friendship episode with Danielle Jackson. And we also have a friendship episode that came out recently called Stop Flaking on Your Friends, where we talk about this. But yeah, like less, right? Under promise, over deliver in your friendships too.
Under promise, over deliver. Say no and then surprise them with a yes. You know, like you'll get a lot of ground if you pull that stuff.
Don't make everyone your best friend. I think,
no,
right? Like that's what I'm thinking God. Too with under, like, no. You don't have to, don't put people on this pedestal.
And it's okay to like start slow, right?
Yeah.
It's okay to be like, I really like this person. I'm going to keep getting to know them.
Yeah.
Right. And also like it is a red flag. Like if you just met somebody and they ask you to be a bridesmaid, you're allowed to say no. That is like you are. I think too, like that's maybe like the summation of all of this for me is it's like you are allowed to do what you need to do and what is best for you while still being kind and respectful and supportive. And you don't have to be cruel to do something differently. Mm-hmm. Right. You like your friend coming to you and saying, I can be there for one night with bells on. I will be like, do you need me that day? Like I can do that day. It's exactly as you said, her 100% was much different than the single friend,
yeah.
Right? Like my 100% is much different than yours. That's okay. It's neither good nor bad. It just is. And I think for all of us to just get like really honest and realistic about what we do have to give and where we are at and what does work for us is what allows everybody to be like set up for success from the get-go. Because also that then helps, like if we're talking about from the perspective of the bridesmaid, like that helps the bride temper her own expectations and know what she's working with. And also, I'm going to say something like really controversial here. I kind of think baby showers are stupid.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I didn't have one.
I think baby. Yeah, I know. You had a
I actually have been to a very lovely baby shower and it was because it did not feel like a baby shower at all. We ate food. It was very casual. There was no sit down, arranged, assigned seating. It was like mingly and we didn't talk about the baby or anything. There weren't like activities. It just felt like a party where.
Yeah. See, as a Mormon, I have been to more baby showers than I have wedding events.
Well, I guess that makes if everyone freaking has multiple kids and they have multiple.
Yeah.
I also don't really like sprinkles. Like I know most women don't plan the second one. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like I get it. Like probably a lot of you listening are like, well, I had one, but I didn't plan it. It was like my mom or whatever.
Right.
So like totally
your
get it.
Like, yeah, go for it. I think nobody loves it.
I just really struggled with the idea of being on display.
Yeah.
While I was pregnant, where I loved being on display as a bride.
Well, because it's about you.
Yeah. I've never felt more objectified physically in my life than when I was pregnant.
Mm.
Because everything is like, how big are you? How little are you? How big is the baby? How little is the baby? Are you creating the right environment? Like, it's so objectifying. And it's the one thing where people just think it's totally normal and fine to just comment on how you look and what your body size is all the time. And I was just, I felt very like dehumanized when I was pregnant because I felt very like, I still exist.
Yeah.
This is still my stomach that you are touching just because there is a baby inside of it. Literally nobody besides my husband touched my stomach the entire my parents.
To be frank, that's how it should be.
It's just so uncomfortable. But like people are really close to their families and I don't know. My family's not a big touchy-feely family. And also I felt so physically uncomfortable pregnant. Very few people touched me at all. And I didn't get a maternity shoot. I didn't, you know, and in hindsight, like I wish I had some more pictures. Literally, there's one picture of me pregnant, Sam, and it is in the hospital. That is it. One. And I took it because I said to Mike, there are no pictures of me pregnant. And one day Peyton is going to ask me if she's adopted. And I need a photo of proof.
Did you go out of your way to avoid photos?
Yes. I mean, I also didn't do a lot because I was so freaking miserable. Like I was so sick. Like we did go on vacation. I also was someone who didn't look pregnant. I just looked
bloated.
Wide, sort of, because I have a very long torso.
You're lucky.
So I didn't like how I looked, though. I didn't have like a cute belly. I like was very long torsoed. So Peyton was just like sticking
she was just
straight
like,
up.
Standing like a pencil.
So I just like looked weird. So I never got very big, but a lot of people then didn't think I was pregnant, sort of. And it like created this weird thing where I never felt obviously pregnant. And that made me feel really self-conscious, which is stupid. I know I'm like complaining about like, I was so little when I was pregnant. But
it
I just
your experience.
I just didn't. I just felt so, I don't know. I expected to like glow and feel great. Yeah. And I hated how I looked. No one ever thought that I was pregnant. So it felt weird, sort of. And I just... Yeah, 0 out of 10 stars. Do not recommend. Never doing it again.
I don't know where my children are gonna go.
You'll have a cute pregnant belly.
I'm 5'2".
No, you will have a cute little belly. That is what happens with people with short torsos, is they look adorable pregnant.
Well, I hope so.
I think if people want to like do cute things and like look at photos of themselves and you do get you know, I do think it's different where I don't know, by the time I like when I had a bridal shower, I like already owned a home, so it was like what I had people donate to like us to go on our honeymoon, which I don't know, feels slightly strange now looking back on it, that I like asked people to donate money to me, but also I like owned everything I needed and I didn't want anything.
No, I straight up told my mom I don't want a wedding shower at this point.
Yeah, I mean, so I get the baby a little bit more because it's like, especially people can like give you old stuff of theirs and it can feel like communal and stuff. But I don't know. I think.
Do you know what I'm sitting here realizing? And this is with me. And if anybody's listening to this and you're chronically single, when you're chronically single, it's actually really hard to imagine people celebrating you in that way. Like that, to be like that individualized. And so, that's an interesting thing that I'm going to have to sit with. Because it's, it becomes this moment of like, well, no one's ever done it anyway. So why start it now?
Like you don't want to have you've already said you're not going to have a bridal shower.
Yeah, I'm just like, well, I've already, like, because I have like an entire home's worth of stuff already. Yeah. And I'm very fortunate to be in a position where like if I need something, I can just buy it. So, and I have. So... Yeah, that's kind of, I wonder, if you've ever felt that way as someone who's like chronically single or you didn't have those moments, I would love to know your thoughts. Because I think while you were talking about that, I was like connecting that in my brain of like, but why? Like, because I love celebrating other people. I'm totally all for it. But I think when you missed those typical age milestones of when those things happen, you kind of are just like, well... I guess that's it. But I don't know. I think like long story short with all of this, clearly communicate, try to go into it, having an idea of like why you're actually doing what you're doing and actually have like some forethought to it and be open to people telling you no, be open to people asking for some flexibility. Try your best to show up authentically.
And if you commit to going.
Yeah. Go.
Show up.
Show up and go. Don't tell someone you're going to go and then not go.
Yeah. That's say you're not sure.
Yeah.
And maybe that doesn't work for them. And then that's a no.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, like, if you're going to plan a 4-day trip to Bali, don't expect anybody to go with you.
To me, this conversation almost summarizes and lands in the same way of how we talk about boundaries, which is like, you're allowed to have boundaries.
Yeah.
And other people are allowed to have boundaries too. Right? Like, you're allowed to say no. And other people are allowed to say no. You're allowed to do what you want. And other people are allowed to do what they want.
Yeah.
Well, this was a fun episode.
This was fun. This was good.
Yeah. Thank you all so much for listening. We appreciate you.
Yeah. As per usual, no answers, just thoughts. And hope this tackled kind of all the different points that you've had about it. Because a lot of people were like asking us like kind of different questions. And I think in our minds, we were both trying to kind of address some of the questions people had. So,
but let us know if we didn't cover something and put it in the comments on Spotify or DM us, and we will come back and do another one.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's mind.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot knot.
Very good. I got here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.